We're going to read tonight in chapter 17 of the book of Revelation. And there came one of the seven angels which had the seven vials and talked with me, saying unto me, Come hither, I will show unto thee the judgment of the great whore that sitteth upon many waters, with whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication. Verse 4, And the woman with her red and purple and scarlet colour, and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand, full of abominations and filthiness of her fornication. And upon her forehead was a name written, Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots, and the abominations of the earth. And I saw the woman drunken with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And when I saw her, I wondered with great admiration. Now then you have the explanation of that beast that we were speaking about in verse 9. And here is the nine which hath wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sitteth. And there are seven kings, ever fallen, and one is, and the other is not yet come. And when he cometh, he must continue a short space. And the beast that was, and is not, even he is the eighth, and is of the seven, and goeth into perdition. And the ten horns which thou sawest are ten kings, which have received no kingdom as yet, but received power as kings one hour with the beast. These have one mind, and shall give their power and strength unto the beast. These shall make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb shall overcome them. Then you have the verse 16, And the ten horns which thou sawest upon the beast, these shall hate the whore, and shall make her desolate and naked, and shall eat her flesh, and burn her with fire. Now chapter 18, verse 2, And he cried mightily with a strong voice, saying, Babylon the great is fallen, and has become the habitation of devils, and the hold of every foul spirit, and the cage of every unclean and hateful bird. Now, go further down, please, to verse 7. How much she hath glorified herself and lived deliciously, so much torment and sorrow give her, for she saith in her heart, I sit a queen, and am no widow, and shall see no sorrow. Now, verse 10. These are the merchants standing afar off for fear of her son, saying, Alas, alas, thou great city, Babylon, that mighty city, for in one hour is thy judgment come. And the merchants of the earth shall weep and mourn over her, for no man buyeth their merchandise any more. Now, look, please, at verse 17, For in one hour is so great riches come to none. And every shipmaster, and all the company in ships and sailors, and as many as stayed by sea, stood afar off and cried, when they saw the smoke of her burning, saying, What city is like unto this great city? Now then you have what won't be in the city in the future, the light of the candle, the craftsmen, and so on. Now, verse 24, And in her was found the blood of prophets, and of saints, and of all that was slain upon the earth. That will do so. No one reading the book of Revelation can have any doubt, but it's the writer's purpose and the Lord's purpose to set two women over against each other. The harlot of which we've been reading, and the bride, the Lamb's wife. I judge that the very language that is used even at the introduction of both is significant. Because you remember that in showing this wonderful revelation to John, the angel took him into the wilderness. And possibly the same angel, but certainly a kindred angel, at the very least we can say that, took John to the mountain to show him the bride, the Lamb's wife. Then again, you will equally see that both are not only likened to women, but both are likened to city. That is, you have the city of Babylon, linked with the harlot woman, and we have the city of Jerusalem, linked with the bride, the Lamb's wife. Now, whatever you do, and try your best not to drop into the difficulty, don't, please, get occupied with literal cities. We do our utmost to prove beyond question that the city of Jerusalem mentioned in chapter 21 is not a literal city. I think we'll have little problem in proving that. And we're equally certain that the city mentioned in 17 and 18, indeed it has been mentioned already in 14 and 16, in these maybe five chapters of the book of Revelation, we have reference to this evil system. But it's under the twofold figure, or symbol, a corrupt woman and a city, one emphasizing its evil and corruptness, the other showing its influence and its commercial influence, particularly emphasized in chapter 18. Now, we have a variety of views as to what is in view. Many will tell us that when you're dealing with the city of Babylon, you're dealing with a symbolic city that covers false religion from the foundation of the world until the setting up of the kingdom. I don't share that view. There are others who tell us that when you're dealing with the city of Babylon and with this woman, the harlot here, that you're dealing with the evil religions in the world from the time of the apostles right until the Lord's coming. Now again, I don't agree with that. I don't think you have Muhammad Masih. I don't think you have all those religions of the eastern countries. Indeed, I don't think any of those things are introduced in here. Now the reason why I didn't believe that first statement was because it's the markers of Jesus. And so false religion has nothing to do with the marking of the followers of Jesus, for he wasn't born in Old Testament times. Then again, I think you will equally see that what is in view is this, that God has destined, now think this carefully into your mind, that his blessed Son would have a pure companion to enjoy his love throughout all eternity. And that pure companion is the delight of the heart of the Christ of God. Equally, Satan has desired to have a woman, a substitute of the bride. But she's a corrupt woman, just as delightful to the heart of Satan as the bride is to the heart of Christ. I hope you think that out. In other words, you have the devil's masterpiece imitating Christianity, or what we commonly call Christendom, without any idea of salvation or anything of that nature. You can't but admit, unless you're very dumb, that there must be a tremendous amount of things in this world that are called Christian, that you, as a believer in the Lord Jesus, know as well as you're alive, there's nothing of Christ about them. Not a trace of Christ about them. The whole thing is absolutely contrary to Christ and contrary to the gospel and contrary to the ways of God. So that we might well look at it in this way, that there is an imitation of true Christianity that is going to be judged. Now remember, all in it will remain when the church is gone. Remember that it will only come in to prove you when the salt's removed. And its corruption will only be in full sway when the saints of this age are taken up at the rapture to meet the Lord in the air. I hope you're clear about that. But remember, what will then come out in full bloom is in germ already operating in the world at the present time. Now, the question, I want to answer the question that would naturally raise in your mind. Why is it likened to both a woman and a sitter? When you think of a woman, of course, you think of its unity. I think you're clear on that. And then when you think of the city, you think of its community. That which makes it up. So that the city is the collective side of things. Build it together. Whereas the woman is the unit side of things. All one mind, as we read further down here in our chapter. Now let's take a look at this. You say, now tell us exactly what you have in mind, because we don't want to be vague. We believe that the great sister, commonly known as Roman Catholic, and all that appertains to it, that's amalgamated with it and like it, we believe that's what's in view in our passage. And if this meeting produces anything like the hatred for that cruel system that's luring thousands, perhaps millions, down to hell as the years go by, I hope we learn something tonight that will make us deeply thankful that we weren't involved in its awful delusions. I hope we learn that. For I believe as assemblies we need to be careful that we're not becoming accustomed to that empty shell of imitation that is so popular in the world even at this very hour. So dangerously popular. For that's what we will see in a moment or two. Now you'll notice that it's a corrupt system. Now I would judge, I hope we're all satisfied, that when we're reading of the harlot here and so on, we're not thinking so much of immorality. Do all of you know enough, I hope you know enough, to know that where Roman Catholicism exists, immorality abounds. Don't be denying that, for I wouldn't agree with you if you did. That system has led to corrupt living. You'll expect that, for your corrupt doctrine always produces corrupt living. But that's not the point I think is here. It's that corruption of another kind. Just as God in the old economy, when exposing idolatry, he ever used the figure of the unfaithful wife, of the unclean woman, to demonstrate the corruption of that evil system and that which is so contrary to the mind of a holy God. Now, you will have to agree, I think fairly well agree, that God has a mind to punish this, to wipe it out. And we read at the end of chapter 16 that it will be like a stone that he would cast into the sea and have finished with it forever. Now I want to tell you, you've searched the millennial kingdom in vain to find a single Roman Catholic. None of those people there will ever be plagued with this system. The point we want to get at now is this. That it's not only a corrupt system in that sense. It mixes and corrupts and destroys everything. You see, it makes the world and its evil with the name of Christianity. You can't deny that. You can't deny that. All the evils of the world are linked up with it. And yet all are called Christian to try and put a nice face on. Now I want us to see another side of it. And that is this. That this woman is not only corrupt, but she's charming. That's what many don't understand. There's nothing so appealing to the human heart as a religion that will let you sin away and confess away and get all the forgiveness you want, but sin as much as you like. That appeals to people. You see, she's here described, decked up with all the jewellery she can gather up, and with very, very bold and very glorious attire. Yes, kingly robes on her. And you know right well that that appeals to the human mind and to the human heart. People love something sparkling to look at. the Lord something with splendor about it. And when they look at the system, they say, oh, what a wonderful set. How amazing. It will put you into, we might say, real admiration when you view it. It's so attractive. And that's why it's just so decorated and so appealing to the sons of men. You know, don't you? I hope you're thinking a little. I don't want to be putting thoughts into your mind you like they had them before I started to tell you. Did you notice that all the great men of the earth are in some way or other sneaking after Rome? Did you notice that all the rulers practically of the world can't move about in a tour, but they'd have to call with Rome, you know, and have to have an interview, wouldn't they? Don't you know that everywhere you go, no matter where you turn, there's an attraction with it. So that the intellects and the great men and the wonders of the world, they're all after it. It draws them. Look at its ornate building. Look at its way of moving about and its parading around. Look at its wonderful arts and so on. Why, the whole thing is just appealing to the eye. And then again, you know, it not only appeals to the eye, but it appeals to the ear. Because when judgment has come, there'll be no more music heard in it. And you know what religious word can do without music? Indeed, some of the Andes don't seem to be able to carry on without it. But the way they have got into it. What they can do without music, they must have something for the ear as well as something for the eye. Something to appeal to the human breast. And then she not only has something for the eye and something for the ear, but she has something for the lip as well, for she has a cup. And she's willing to give drink. And her drink is stupefying. And even those who swallow it, that they're drunken. That's all alarming, isn't it? Oh, it tastes sweet. It's the wine. It has a nice flavor. But once it's imbibed, and once it's absorbed, the person who has swallowed it has become drunk. Any of you know, and I don't know much about it, and I don't want to know. There's nobody as hard to talk to as drunk people. You can't reason with them. They'll maybe stay with you, you know, and they don't mean to have it. Some of you know right well, visiting around, you'll meet with maybe Roman Catholics and they'll agree with all you say. Oh, yes, wonderful. Nice, brother. Yes, very nice. Nice, mister. And all that. You see, they're sort of drunk. You don't know what you're talking about. You can hardly get them sobered up. The thing's saying that. Why is it? Or the wine? The wine has actually made them drunk. Now, you think of how drunk they are. You see, only a drunk man would believe that saying certain words over an infant and putting a certain sign on the top of it would turn a child of Adam into a child of God. You get a drunk man to believe that. No sane man would believe that. Mr. Gilmer used to ask, was the magic in the water or in the finger or in the words? You see, you need magic to do the like of them. And you know right well that every one of those gunmen and all these murderers that are plowing around their country and every one of them, they cross were in their face. A few hours after they were born, maybe a few months. See, drunk men will believe that. But sober-minded people wouldn't drink that in. Now you know more, don't you? But nobody but a drunk man would believe that putting a human hand on a human head would fill a human being with the Holy Ghost. Not what they believe. 7 or 8 and 10. The child is confirmed, as they call it. And they say, that's snark. He's filled with the Holy Ghost. And only a drunk man would believe that a piece of flour and water made up with a few words said on the top of it would actually turn into the very body of Christ
until the very teeth of the man is chewing the bones and body of Christ as he goes through.
Like, I don't want to believe that.
I wouldn't believe it.
Hope you wouldn't believe it.
I hope you wouldn't take that in. You see, the wine makes them drunk, and they don't know what they're thinking.
Then again, oh, when a solemn comes to the end to get anointed, get absolution, and the whole delusion, and they're born with deceit, and they live with deceit, and they go into eternity with deceit, with a lie and a rape.
I hope you take it serious. I hope you don't look lightly upon it. I hope we don't think lightly about it. Because this is not only her charm, but she has a cup that has kept the world in such conditions that they can scarcely detect the folly of what they're inviting. Then again, I want you to notice this. I want you to see her control. Oh yes, she sits on the beast. Now we've learned enough, I hope, that the beast is the head. It's, in fact, it's the Roman Empire, but it's, we might say, centered in his head. It's a combination, as you know, the beast covers both the Empire and its river in the end. We'll see that in a moment or two. But all I want to point out is that she sits on it, eh? And that means that the, now listen to me, that the beast is upholding her. The civil powers that were holding her up. She's supported by it. At the same time, she controls. If we knew tonight how much power Rome has in the affairs of this world, we would likely tremble. It can penetrate into the very secrets and the secret councils of the rulers of this world. There's not a woman in heart but has to ask themselves the question, how will that be taken by Rome when I take a certain step? It's not that they just have to do what they're told, but at the same time they're always considering, will this hurt Rome? And if it's going to hurt Rome, no, we can't do that. Her control is worldwide. But you see, on the one hand, the climax that's approaching, but while the beast will, in a sense, we know that, have almost absolute control in that civil way, in the civil world, yet on the other hand, behind him, and operating through him, and supported by him, will be this corrupt system. There'll be a wonderful amalgamation between this corrupt system and the beast of the future. Hope we're clear on that. In the middle of all this, the writer stops, as it were, describing a woman and gives us a look at the beast on which she's sitting, so that we're not yet left lost in confusion. And reminds us that those seven heads that are on the beast represent forms of government. Because, now listen carefully, we're told that five are fallen. Now five are fallen. That means to say that there were five forms of Roman government that had existed, that are no longer in existence in a sense. They're fallen. I didn't say they ceased to exist, but they're fallen. Of course, you see, there's still seven heads at the finish, but there's some are out of control. Then he says the sixth one there is. That is evidently the condition of rule in John's own day. And then he says there's a seventh one coming. That's the beast that we were reading of in chapter 13, and he will develop into the eighth. Because you see, the eighth is a unique form of Roman government that never has been known before. And you say, what's that? The Roman Empire with 10 kings under one king. Now that's a unique type of empire that has never existed in the past. Are you hearing? That's something new. So that while he begins to rule as the seventh, he develops into the eighth, in the sense that with the amalgamates, the 10 kings, that gives him a character and a feature that never existed before. Now, with your dear young believers, of course, it's the young folk we want to have. Well, you notice that there's no mention of the horns falling. It's only the head. And as we pointed out the other night, the heads are consecutive. One after the other. Whereas the horns are simultaneous. They all exist together. And those 10 kings will give their power to the beast, which is being ridden by the woman. And they will be of one mind. That is, they'll have a united judgment. They're not doing something that they're fighting about. You know, they're part of the even parliamentary men maybe agreeing for a while and then they'll run across each other and differ. But these 10 kings will be absolutely one, and then their supremo, as we would call him, their head man, their great man, who will be the eighth. He will control the whole situation. Now, did you notice? Now, please keep your Bible clear in your mind. It's immediately said that they'll make war with the Lamb. Now, you weren't at the meeting last night. Some of you wouldn't come here, but we're glad to see you when you do come. But the one thing we do want you to remember, that we are pointing out last night about the big war that will take place in opposition to Christ to try and prevent him setting up his kingdom. Now here's where we have the secret of it. The 10 kings plus their great head will be amongst those who will make war with the Lamb, trying to prevent him take his kingdom. But they will be defeated, for the Lamb shall overcome them himself. Are you hearing that? That gives you that historical piece that comes in the middle. Now, wonder of wonders. Toward the very end of the tribulation period, toward the close of those 3.5 years that we have reigned about in these meetings for several nights now, there will be a great change take place in the affairs of men. For the beast will get tired of the tyranny of the woman and get tired of her control and her rigorous behavior. And he will throw her overboard. He will ditch her over, as we would say. He will never over her, and she will go down. And God will turn his mind against her, and the civil will be the instrument used for her destruction and for her misery. You say, why would that be? You know, it's always a why that gets into your mind, doesn't it? What can turn him against her? Well, you see, she's a great center of wealth. And with all those plagues that I have been preaching on these nights, I don't know how you came every night or not, but if you did, you heard about plenty of plagues and judgments and all the distress that will be in those days. You see, these kings with their head, they'll begin to think, will you meet some of the stuff? And the best way to get it is to put her out of control, and it says they'll eat her up. Now, you don't believe that they're cannibals. I hope you read your Bible intelligently. But they will absorb. They'll absorb her substance and take it all into their control. And say, here, boys, she's not going to have millions lying up in her coffers and us not get her share. She's not going to have all these luxuries and us not being the better of it. And so they'll rob her and destroy her and rob her of all her strength and all her power. Put her out of existence as far as operating against them is concerned. And that's what we learned in at the end of chapter 17. You know what we're going to find? That after centuries of influencing political power, there's coming a day when they see through it. Hope you know what I mean by that. I talk sometimes very strange language, but you know what I mean by that. They'll see the corruption of it, and they'll destroy it. They'll take their turn out of it, as it were, and then they'll destroy it. you've all lived long enough and you're better students of history than I am. But you've seen this before now, haven't you? You've seen this. Mind you, you don't realize in the world, I don't think we do here, what's going on. That's South African trouble, you know. You need to investigate what that all is. It looks on the surface just a lot of quite significant action and all that, but you look into it. You'd be amazed what's behind that. You'd be amazed what's behind all these things that are happening in the world. If you only knew, you want to talk to somebody that has been there and knows what's going on. And what reads in the paper, of course, is just as if the whites are pounding down the poor blacks and murdering them and killing them and so on. You need to look into that a wee bit. And I sometimes wish I could get talking to some of these people in high places. I think I'd keep them quiet for a while. And at least I'd make them think if I couldn't make them change. Leave it at that. We keep the political out of it as best we can. Now when we come to chapter 18, this would have been the big problem with now. You see, but that cannot be the same in chapter 18 as it is in 17. Because in chapter 17, the whole emphasis is on the woman. Now it's not all together, but the emphasis is there. It's her corruption, it's her effectiveness, it's her cup, it's all her that's emphasized in chapter 17. But when you come to chapter 18, it's the whole city side of things that's involved, and the commercial side of things that's involved. Some of you, I'm sure, have read quite a number of men much better learned than I am, and they would tell you, yes, in chapter 17 you have the corrupt system, all right, and the symbolic system. But when you come to chapter 18, you have a literal city, and you have a literal Babylon, and you have this, that, and the other. Well, I personally don't agree with that at all. I don't agree with that at all. I see that there's another thing. It's just the same thing, viewed now from the city angle, and from the commercial angle. And we'll have a look at that now for the remaining part of our meeting. First of all, I would like to point out that in chapter 18, the whole emphasis on what God does on her. Whereas in chapter 17, her destruction came about by the overthrow of her power by the beast. And you know, a lot of folk can't understand their Bible for this reason. They can't see that when human instruments do a certain thing, that God can say that he did it. And God's doing a thing, but he may use instruments to bring it about, but it's still himself that's doing it. I hope you can understand that. He's doing it through his delegates, as you live. Or he can even pick up wicked men to carry out his judgment. Now, let's see that thing. Because we don't want to make bold statements and not prove them. You remember that God actually called the heathen nation his battle-axe. His battle-axe. Even though it was armies of the Assyrians, or the Syrians, or the Babylonians, even though it were human armies, they were his instruments to carry out his work. And sometimes he calls them his threshing instruments. It's God's doing it, but he's allowing human instruments to carry out his work. Now we mustn't get confused, because in one place his own personal dealings are emphasized, and in the other, his instruments that he has implied are emphasized. It just all depends on what is needful for us to hear. Now when you come to chapter 18, Babylon the Great is fallen, is fallen. You know, that seemed to be the amazement. I think you couldn't read chapter 18 without reading it as one of the greatest chapters for amazement that we have in the Bible. Everything's a wonder in it. And they can't all understand the nations that have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication, and the kings and so on, they can't understand how such a wonderful system, is it 200 million in it? I don't know how many millions in it. That such a system could ever crumble and ever come down and could ever be judged and ever be removed from the earth. You see, men can't understand that. Now, you notice what it says in verse 4. You wouldn't have to miss that. Come out of her, my people. Oh, that was frightening. wonder. You just wonder. You see, in those days that are coming, it will be very difficult. Of course, you see the distinction. Now, you need to think this out in your mind as best you can. The distinction between the beast and the woman that rides upon her, is this, that the beast will blaspheme God. But the woman is never said to do that. There's a certain amount of subtlety in that. And that's where many a time Christians are easily fooled, you know. They don't see a thing in its nakedness. And a wee bit of sugar coating can be very alluring. Anyhow, the qualities come out of her. Now, leaving it to the future, we're not going to trust the Bible to put together a message for her. Leaving that all to the future. Do you not think that anything that savours of this harlot woman, of this corrupt system, we too should come out of it? That we too should have nothing to do with it? And more than that we should watch. For this gives me personally far more concern than the mere outward thing, that we don't introduce amongst ourselves some of her evil ideas. Oh, son, don't dare to suggest that. I never seen anything like that. You get a man standing on a platform saying that so many came out in the meetings and dedicated their lives to God. Salvation by works, and you don't believe in that. They put their sons. Who volunteered to serve the Lord? You just need to look at this one sacrifice of service to see something like this. I'm just saying to you. Who's going to serve the Lord? And reluctantly. And slowly, the writer was one of those that went forth. Where are we going to end? Once you introduce to the mind of people a salvation by human effort, by human decisions, by anything that's of self, you're back on the very evil of this corrupt system. Come on now, you got it, you're preaching now. You can't get past it. You must get down to this the moment you get saved. It's hands down. I can do nothing. And the old top lady's hymn that you're tired listening to, you mean you still, good doctor, nothing in my hand I bring. I'm neither giving Christ my heart, nor giving Christ my life, nor giving anything I'm taking. Hope we're all clear on confession tonight. For some things it's getting a wee bit muddled, even on our own gospel platform. And we say that as well. Young man said to me one time, about a year ago, feel strange. There's a strange gospel being preached from what I've always heard when I was a child. I said, what's that? And he says, you know, we hear now about people dedicating their lives to the Lord. See, I never heard of that way when I was young. And that's not in there, and that's not in the denominations now. And we hear people saying that they rededicated their lives to the Lord after wasting a good life. And that was when they got reconverted, as they call it that. I hope you're hearing what I'm at. That salvation's in sinner finding out his lofty state, his hopelessness, his helplessness, his unworthiness. And it's not a word to speak of on his own behalf. He appreciates what another has done, and he thrusts grace, and he rests upon it for eternity. And it's not his big decision that saves him. Nor indeed it's not his anxiety either. What do you mean when they're telling your conversions that you're going pushing your anxiety as if it was your failure? It wasn't your deeds that saved you. It was the wonderful work of grace and the power of God in the gospel. God keep us from getting confused, you know. These are days when we must keep the gospel clear. Otherwise, we're getting into very serious difficulties. And a crop of people will rise up, and all they did at any time was this. And maybe did it at their mother's knee. They decided to be a Christian. And they're going to live the Christian life. And that's all they have to be found. And that's just another delusion. Now I have to get away from that. You notice that when you're in chapter 18, we have a number of people in great lament over Babylon or Babylon's fall. We have, first of all, the kings, that, of course, not the kings, mind you, the 10 kings, but the kings of other nations. And they're greatly perturbed. And all these commercial men are greatly perturbed. Because, you see, their great business has suffered heavily by her fall. There's somebody, what, explain that to them. Come on, suppose you were manufacturing that nice stuff that she uses in her robes and so on. You get no more orders for that. And supposing you were the sculptor carving out all those images that you have around your big buildings, and you were a master sculptor, well, you'd not be needed for that, you see, because we're not needing any more of that stuff. And supposing you were able to carve and wood and make all those beautiful decorations, well, you're out of business too, do you understand? And supposing you were making candles, even candles would be out, for they'd be none of them been used. And you could go on from one business to another, and they'll all be in some way or other. Nothing? Oh, is it terrible that our whole trade's gone? And our whole commerce is over? Just try your best now. You businessmen in Ballymena, you know more about it than I'll ever know. I'm thankful that I know even anything at all. But you know about it. You remove from any business that which is its main, that's making its demand, and you close it up right away. Now you know that. That's why many of the hot men had to close down when people won't stop wearing hats, you know. All you need to do is stop wearing hats and the hot man out there has to quit. You know that. Anybody knows these things. And when these things that Rome has used extensively over the centuries, when they no longer need it, the artists and the painters, and all the handiwork, these beautiful arts that we're all used, they're not needed anymore. The whole system goes down, and all goes down with them. Hope you understand that. What about the man that put lead lights in? And all these nice pictures in the window. And they're not a nice day. What about them, the glass makers that make all the different colours of glass to fit into those pictures and produce the images that they want to put on them? They're out of business too, do you see? And then what about the ships that carry this marble and stuff to make their faces and so on? And then they're not related. Come on now, I'm putting a whole lot of men out of business right away. By removing that whole system, they'll just be like those great as Diana of the Ephesians, those idolaters, who says if this thing goes on, our business will suffer. We can't get making any more shrines. We can't get making any more images. Our whole trade will suffer. And that's why these kings are standing afar off. Now, they're not the 10 kings, but the kings of more distant parts that have come, that are looked upon as if they're sailing in ships. They're not looking at the city of Rome being burnt, but they're looking at the system. I hope you all know that there are two cities in Rome. Maybe you didn't. You need to know. There's the civil power that controls Italy. And then there's the Vatican that sends its ambassadors. And all that whole system that's going on alongside of the civil power. And that's the thing that's being destroyed. That's what will be doing. And that's what will make the men of the world who are failing in these lines of things that I just mentioned, that will make them sad and sore. Our business has collapsed. Did you hear about it? Our business is ended. Our business is ended. We use something like that in figure. Now, I'm not comparing the one with the other too much. You know now, you men know enough to know that in Northern Ireland here, we were employing thousands on man-made fiber. And you look at Kelly Curtis and those factories and But they're not being unreasonable. And when that fibre business, man-made fibre, ceased to be profitable, those places all had to fold up. That wasn't going to cease being used, but it's been manufactured in other parts of the world, likely cheaper or something like that. But I'm going to show you only need to remove the demand for any substance, and you spoil the businessman that has not lived by that faith. Take it away from him, and he's beat. Where there's no demand, he's missed out the oxymelites, but they're no use to it. You can imagine a man with a big heaps and heaps of very precious marble, and all this system stops. What's he going to do with marble? Who wants it? So whether you look at the tradesman with all his skills, or look at the substance that the men are handling, you see they're the master, it can't be used. Oh, what do we do with it? We'll go bankrupt. That's why they're mourning. They're not so sorry about her, you know, but they're sorry about themselves. For the world's always selfish enough to think of number one first. Then when you come to near the end of the chapter, you will notice that these men will be no longer found in her. And then there'll be neither the light of a candle, nor the voice of a bridegroom, nor a bride. And for the merchants were the great men of the earth, for by their sorceries were all nations deceived. Now you see, you know right well, that this corrupt system makes a great deal of marriage. In fact, they would hardly agree that a marriage wasn't marriage, but wasn't inside the system. Hope you know these things. Hope you think about this. Well, you have a Bible in your fingers, the same as I have. And hope you read it and think about it. This whole system is all they want to control home life, as well as every other family. You see, that's the corruption. And he says, that'll all stop. That'll all stop. Babylon will go down, and all that deceit will be removed. And we're not living in the day when it's dead. But the painful facts have to be faced. We're living in the day when it's spreading. We're living in the day when even the land we live in, and particularly in England and Scotland, Wales, that awful system is spread. And we don't hardly realize. I hope you young people will value the gospel light. I hope you will appreciate the fact that you've been allowed to hear out of the soul. And you start. And I hope that when you're at school and you meet with these different folk that have been brought up so deceived that you not only live right before them, but be able to enlighten their minds and, if possible, see them rescued from all the corruption of their very system. I start to think, isn't it, in the middle of all this, we'll have to stop. You not only have a corruption, but you have a cruel death. Oh, the blood was found there. And who will tell them the news that have been murdered? And are still being murdered, even in our own land, by that awful system, or at least agents of it. They all deny it, of course. They would all say, no, 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 we don't want that. But who's doing it? There's certainly no Protestants that's doing it. They're doing it. You have to read it. And just all that is said, there's a certain amount of secret sent there. When it's against the threat, that's a sound of love. And it's sad, isn't it? We need to think about that. Now we are living in the end. And the seeds of what will develop in full bloom when the Lord comes are already growing in our very midst. May God help us to go wide enough away to see what's going on, not to fall back, and not to find something besides some of these deluded, drunken spiritually drunken men and pretending that we're all nations. But that's what matters.